thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Matthew chapters 22, 23, 24, 25, 28, just those last couple of chapters that cover the last days of Jesus. And we'll point out some things about that in just a moment. But while you're getting ready, let's remind each other of what's happening here. And there's something happening. It's obvious when you look at the set at this time of the year that we're getting ready to do something that God has privileged us with for the last 25 years or so. And it has been a blessing. It has been a privilege for us to be able to present the story of Jesus in a clear way to a world who needs to hear that story over and over again. And why we've been so blessed to be able to put it together the way it's come together and make sense to people, I don't know, but I rejoice in the opportunities that we've had and that we're going to have this year again. So I want you to see it as an opportunity. I want you to see it as a privilege. I want you to see it as something God is doing and using. He uses lots of things. There are a lot of dramas, there are a lot of musicals, there's a lot of things that are happening around Easter. You know, it is the most celebrated and ought to be the most sacred of all Christian holidays on the calendar. And the reason being is because it talks about the resurrection. It's all based on the resurrection and nothing else. Of course, you could say his death and his burial, and that's absolutely right for our sins. But without the resurrection, the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if our hope is only in the fact that he died for our sins, we're still going to be miserable people because life is in the resurrection. New life is in the resurrection. Hope comes to one's heart because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ being the first fruits of those who are alive. And then we then are born into that, become the second, third, fourth fruits. And that's been happening now for 2,000 years. So we're able to present the message. So this is more than a drama, as we said over and over again. So a couple of things I want to point out that we're doing in preparation. And this isn't an announcement as much as this. This is the message of the time for us right now here that surrounds this Easter week that's coming up. It's a message to us as a congregation here at Faith, this opportunity we have. So there's a couple of things that we can do in preparation for that. Probably the biggest thing we can do is pray. And there are a couple things in your handout. So if you'll just grab your update, there's several different papers in there you want to pull out. First of all, the ticket that announces and gives us the title of the presentation this year, One for All. Self-explanatory. He is the one for all. For all people's needs, no matter what they be, Jesus is the one for all. So we're going to highlight that throughout this presentation. That's kind of our theme that we'll take through the whole presentation as we present it. Now, these are important because this is your means of communicating to your friends, relatives, family members, fellow workers, people on the street, whatever they might be, that this thing is happening and they need to come. So you need to go out of your way to invite them. And again, it's not just another drama or a musical. It's a message that's highlighted with drama, music, live animals, children. There's some 200 people in the cast. It's just, and please don't entertain the thought, well, I've been here before. Matter of fact, I came 7 or 8 times. Listen, the message will never change. But we try to add some things that make that message alive. So you're going to see some new songs. You're going to see some new things. You're going to hear some testimonies. We really feel that this is especially really anointed for the day and hour that we're living in. So you want to bring the hurting. You want to bring the hopeless. You want to bring those who think they have it all together. And I think it's going to expose some things in their heart and they'll be open. So hundreds, thousands of these have been printed. Pick up as many as you can use, okay, and pray over them. Then there's another card in there. It's a 3x5 white blank card. I've written on one side of this. Here's what this white card's for. Again, it's an opportunity for you to begin to think of who you're going to invite. So you can begin to write even now and even during this message and the rest of the service here or later on. Write down some of the names. I think it's kind of as you begin to write it down, it maybe makes more of an impression on your heart that you're going to go out of your way to do this. And here's what we're doing this year. We normally come and we bring them to the cross. But when I was in Israel, I had a thought, let's bring them to the tomb. Because the tomb represents the resurrection. And we're believing for a resurrection for these people and God to touch their life. So last night, we've already started to do this. And you can't really see it, but we begin to throw some cards up here with names on. And this is the tomb for now, and you'll see that unfold as become the empty tomb. But that's what we're going to do. So bring those cards up today and simply put them somewhere there, okay? And that means we're going to be praying for them. My wife informed me that there are 10 women's group already been formed that are specifically praying for salvation of people's souls during Easter. So they'll get a hold of some of these cards. The men pray on Wednesday morning. We're going to be praying. The women pray at 5:30 on Tuesday morning. Friday, that leads me up to the next announcement. This coming Friday, what we're doing is we've set aside Friday as a day of fasting and prayer for Easter, okay? So we're going to fast and we're going to pray. So we're asking everyone to think about Friday and think about taking some time and fasting. Here's what Jesus said about fasting. Jesus said there are just certain things that are not going to happen unless you fast and pray when I leave you. And he was talking about leaving them for a period of time. We're living in that time. He said certain breakthroughs. There are certain strongholds in people's lives. There are certain, you know, places people are in darkness that just, they're not going to see the light unless we seriously go to prayer and in the spirit realm break the darkness over their life and make a way for the light to come in, the gospel to come in. So we're going to fast. We're asking everyone to fast that day. And then we're going to end our fast Friday night with a prayer time together. It's called a rise. It's going to happen in the prayer chapel. So from 6 to 10, you can come, and that'll be a way of breaking your fast. After that, you could break your fast, where you're going to come fasting, and we'll pray. Now, the last prayer meeting we had, it was packed out. I mean, it was exciting for me to be able to go. How often do you go to a building where a prayer meeting is called and you can't get in? I mean, how many say that's a good problem? That's a good problem. We decided not to move it because that prayer chapel has been designated for prayer, but we've made accommodations for overflow, and that's going to be on David's Court. So David's Court is right across the street there at the end of the building over here, and there'll be worship and praise going on in there so we can gather at both places. So it's going to be a good time to end our fast. If you can't fast all day, take a meal. Fast something. Think about this week maybe fasting something. What does fasting do? It helps us focus. When you think, man, why am I so hungry? You think about, oh, yeah, I'm praying. I'm supposed to be praying, and I need to pray for so-and-so. I need to pray for my marriage. I need to pray for that prodigal son. I need to pray for that neighbor who needs a touch in their lives, and I want to invite them to Easter. So that's all going to happen Friday night. All of these things, for the purposes, we're focusing in, and we're going to believe God for revival, spiritual awakening in our community. Over the last 25 years or so, conservatively speaking, I was just thinking of the tens of thousands of people who have come. But more importantly than that, we believe, conservatively, over 25,000 people have come to know Christ. Because as a result of this presentation of this gospel message, that's no light thing, amen? Yeah, let's give God praise for that. To God be the glory. That's why he gave his life. That's why Jesus died on a cross. That's what the whole thing is about. Giving his life for lost mankind. And once we're found and get in, our job doesn't end, it really begins. We've got to turn back around and get out there and get it out. I'll talk about that further. So that's happening, okay? Everybody, pray for the cast this week. Pray for the children that are in it. Pray for those who would be speaking and singing and just all of those things. It's just going to, we're looking forward to it. An exciting time. One more thing, and that is for anyone who might be visiting us or recently visiting us, we're having a Taste of Faith this Wednesday. So this flyer is in there. And the Taste of Faith is one once a month, we get together, and Cheryl and I, my wife and I, kind of host a dinner right outside of these doors. And we set up an area on Wednesday night at 6:30. We go to 7:45 while the service is happening in here. And we have a meal together. No agenda, just to talk, just to share, hear your story a little bit around the different tables, how you ended up in faith, what God's doing in your life, and is there anything we can do to help you? So we just want to welcome you. We want to greet you. We want to meet you. Okay? So that's happening Wednesday night. Look at the details on there. You can just RSVP and we'll get going. So great week. Great days ahead with everything that is happening. And all of us can be part of it. Okay? We still all alive and well? All right. I'm going to get to Matthew here now as I talk about something. Cheryl and I just returned from Israel. We got in here Thursday, and there were 37 of us that went along here, most of the people from the church, but a couple people that we became friends with that are from some other churches that joined up with us. Had a marvelous time. Israel was beautiful this time of the year. It's green. It's flourishing with wildflowers, and it's just a beautiful time of the year. It was cold in Jerusalem. The wind was blowing. It was cold in Jerusalem, but it was a great time. And as always, there's something new that we always encounter. I've had the opportunity to be there several times, and Cheryl even more times than I've been there. But I do pray. And I say, Lord, you know, I just don't want to make this just another traveling opportunity. The greatest joy we get out of going is taking people. Is because to see the expressions on their faces as they experience things that they never thought they would experience in their life, how the Bible comes alive, is a great joy to us. But I also ask the Lord to touch me in fresh ways every time I go, not just to see new archaeological digs or a new site, although they're exciting, especially as they point us to the Bible and point us to the truths of the Bible and once again verify that everything that God did was right and true, no matter how much is disputed in the world scene. So while we were there, I prayed for this. So our traveling usually takes us from the north to the south. We usually make it around in the 13 days and cover a lot of the beautiful sites. Old Testament sites, so we'll go to places like where we know Abraham was and visited. We go to place where the first tabernacle showed up in the Promised Land, place like Shiloh and where they set up the tabernacle, where Samuel was brought up and became a prophet, and he heard the voice of God. You read that story, and we were right there where it happened. So we go to Old Testament sites where Gideon went to the spring, and they drank from the spring. It was the very spring. It's the only one in the area where Gideon was, so we know it's the very waters where he drank from. So things like those are exciting Old Testament things. But then we move up north, and we focus in on the northern part of Israel, which is the area where Jesus grew up, and he did most of his ministry. We call it the Galilee, because the Sea of Galilee is up there, although it's a lake. And it was around the Lake of Galilee where Jesus spent a lot of his time. He chose his 12 disciples there. He lived there. He went from village to village. He performed miracles there. All around that area. So that's always an exciting place to be. And you make reference, we go to the Bible, we read the story as we stand in the spot where likely it happened. So, but what something fresh did, I encountered something fresh this year. And I encountered it as I moved from the north and just experienced once again reliving where Jesus did these things that I just talked about. But then we move into the Jerusalem area. Now, in Jerusalem, Jesus had visited Jerusalem from time to time in the 3.5 years of ministry. Remember, out of his 33.5 years of his existence on this earth, 3.5 years was dedicated to ministry. Only the last 3.5 years, so it was a very short period of time, but he accomplished a lot in that short period of time. But most of his teachings he did around the Sea of Galilee. He would visit Jerusalem and go back to the Sea of Galilee. But here's what I noticed. Here's what was fresh. And Jesus then spent his last days in Jerusalem. And that's where we're going to pick it up in just a moment. Because once you read Matthew chapter 21, it's called the triumphal entry. That's where Jesus, Palm Sunday is next Sunday. So we celebrate that triumphal entry where Jesus came in and the palms were laid down in front of him and they were shouting their hosannas to the king, proclaiming him to be the Messiah. So he spent his time there, then his last days, and there really was only the last week or so there. But I noticed a shift. And here's what was fresh and different to me. The shift in his teaching. Whereas the teachings that happened around the Sea of Galilee and during most of his life were teaching that applied to life itself. For example, the Sermon on the Mount. And as you read Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount talks about blessed are they, blessed are they, blessed are they. So it's giving us, you're happy, you're blessed if these things are happening in your life. Humility, you're reaching out to the poor. And then he went on to teachings on how to handle conflicts, how to handle forgiveness and the problem with unforgiveness in one's heart. Taught us how to pray. He taught us how to just live life, deal with people. And that's good. That's what Jesus teaches us to do. He revealed the Father's heart in the midst of that. He revealed how to handle our sex life and our marriage relationships and how to keep them pure, things like that. All of these things Jesus taught, how to live good things for us. Then when he gets to Jerusalem and he begins to wind down, we could say, he shifts his teachings and now he begins to teach about the future. So his teachings now are about the kingdom of heaven that is about to come. His teachings begin to involve making preparation, make sure we're ready for his return. He's talking about he's coming up on his death and his burial and his resurrection, but he's getting them to focus in that things are going to begin to happen now, not only that pertain to his last days, but that will pertain to the days in the future. And here's what hit me about that. It's okay to focus in on the kind of teachings that deal with life. That's what we want to do. But here's where we have to be careful. If all we are after, if all we seek after, if all we're hungry after, if all we study, if all we pursue is how to get along better down here, we're going to miss the mark. Because this is not our final destination. And if we begin to think or entertain, it could be consciously or subconsciously, that this is our final destination, what's going to happen is that hope is going to be robbed from your heart. Because your hope is tied to the future. You're a stranger and a pilgrim passing through a strange land. You should be becoming more familiar with this air. You should become more familiar with your future and what God has for you and less familiar with what our attachments down here. How many follow me? Now, the danger in this, and here's what's happening. We're in a culture. And the culture around us, what if they don't know Christ and they haven't heard about God's love and plan for them to spend eternity with him, if they haven't heard that, the best they can do is try to live this life the best they can. So it's a self-improvement. It's making yourself better. It's making yourself get along with people, which would seem, but it's coded to make believe that these things are okay, but it doesn't cover the whole picture. And the whole picture is that we're here for a very short period of time, and then we're on through eternity to be with Jesus. And that's where the hope is. That's where the joy is. That's where the satisfaction comes from. That's from the rewards of knowing this in our heart, that as we plow through life, and yes, we apply the teachings that help us do the things that we need to do, Jesus told us to do, at the same time, we're aware that, hey, my hope yet is still, though, in something better than this. My home is something better than this. So why, and I had a little illustration last night I used, it's like you know you're going to this place to stay for 2 weeks. So it's a nice place, but you don't, it's a structure. You're only going to be there 2 weeks. You're not going to say, okay, we're going to be here for 2 weeks. Let's empty out our bank account, and let's really make it a really comfortable 2 weeks. or let's, you know, you don't put all your energies in trying to, because you know you're going to go from that 2-week temporary structure back into your home. So you're not good, but you're going to enjoy the 2 weeks, but you're looking forward to getting to your home. You follow what I'm saying here? But so many people are putting all their eggs into this basket down here, all their energies, all their finances into temporary structures. They're wasting themselves on that, and they got a home over here. And they have a promise over here that Jesus Christ is coming back, and that's what I'm leading to. We're not talking about the second coming of Christ enough. We're not talking about what Jesus emphasizes last days. I look at it another way, that it would make sense that some of the most important teachings Jesus would definitely emphasize right before he left. He would make sure that I need to get this in. People, I want to leave my followers with these thoughts. And what were the thoughts? I'm coming again. Let not your heart be troubled. He said, I'm going to go, but I'm coming back for you. So be aware of that. I want to ask you a question. How many of us really thought or spent any time rejoicing the fact that Jesus Christ is coming again this last 24 hours, 48 hours, week? When is the last time you really, really thought about the second coming of Christ? How alive is it in your heart? You follow the point I'm trying to make here today. Now, it's not a big point, but it's an important point that I think we need to make. As we approach all of this and all of the method, we approach life itself, let's begin to think about the seriousness of this. All right, it's a good thought. It's one that we should have foremost in our mind that, hey, there's an end of things. Now, I pulled a couple things out of these chapters beginning in Matthew, and I just want to share these things with you. So that you can, so you can jot them down. But more than jot them down, I want you to really absorb these things and maybe bring them to the forefront of your mind and your hearts as we look at them. Now, as I look at the chapters, and I'm going to walk through chapter 22, 23, 24, 25, and then 28. Just real briefly going to hit on it for the next few moments that we have together. I found a couple things, and I'm sure I could have found more, that Jesus was emphasizing. But one thing I found that was very clear in Matthew chapter 22. In Matthew 22, Jesus begins to talk about the kingdom of heaven, and he likened the kingdom of heaven unto a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son. And he sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and people weren't willing to come. So he used this parable, this story, if you would, is to make a point. And I think the point was this in verse 9. After the frustration of others that did not want to come, he said, therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding. Here's the point. All are invited to spend eternity with Jesus. That's what Jesus was emphasizing. All were invited. Now, you might think about that as trivial. Well, okay, all are invited. But listen, it's not trivial if you grew up feeling nothing but rejection all your life. And when an invitation goes out, you're not willing to accept that invitation because you're fearful that you're going to be rejected again. And there are a lot of people, a lot of hurting people in our world, a lot of hurting people right in our midst when we have our services, when we come together, that have been rejected over and over and over and over again. You need to know one thing, you're invited to the wedding. There are a lot of people who've been abused all their life, and they don't want to set themselves up for another abuse thing, but you have been invited. Because you see, the one who is inviting you to this wedding is the one who knows you better than anyone else. It's the one, that's why he came. He didn't come to those who did not need a physician. He came to those who needed a physician. He didn't come to those who could make it on their own, because none of us could make it on our own. But he came to those that would be struggling, that needed to know that there was a healer, that needed to know there was a provider, that needed to know that God's love, as we already were singing it, I mean, the depth of God's love, the width of God's love, Paul describes it. How can we, it's so hard to comprehend that God would just invite all types of people, no matter what you've done in your life. Now, how evil you might have thought you've been, and you're having a hard time accepting the fact that God would invite you to anything, let alone a marriage feast to which he wants to host you. So the point is there's an invitation. And Jesus wanted his disciples to know that all were invited, and not just the religious leaders, not just the high and mighty, not just the rich folks, not just those that were socially accepted by other people. Matter of fact, he made it a point during his life that he rejected their companionship and went to those that were not socially acceptable. And that's where he spent his time. He wants to spend his time with you. How much time? Eternity. Eternity. You're invited to the wedding. All are invited. So whatever you might be thinking, or whatever you've entertained, or how much rejection or disappointments you face in your life, listen, there's one person you can trust, and that is Jesus Christ. Because he not only said this, it wasn't but a few hours later that he went and paid the ultimate price to secure your invitation. He wasn't just a man of words. He was a man of action. And that was Jesus was all about. So you're invited to it. And anyone you can think of, you might think, well, that person's too far gone. Listen, I'm so thankful that the Lord didn't listen to my brother. Back in 1971, when I attended his wedding and I walked away from the wedding, I didn't hear this, but a couple years later, when I walked away, you know what he said to my other family members? He's too far gone. Here's a guy who lived in a tree telling me I'm too far gone. He's talking about someone who's deceived. No, but really, there are some people, in some people's eyes, they might say, you're too far gone. But I wasn't too far gone for God. And I'm so thankful that he saw that and drew me in 1971. I won't be standing here today with the hope that I have in my heart. So I accepted that invitation, and hundreds and thousands of others. And I pray, if you haven't accepted it, that you will do that. The second thing I find, and it moves us right into chapter 23. It is amazing he spends all of chapter 23 giving us a strict warning against religion. Strict warning against religion. And if you begin to read down that chapter and you find out that this warning is to the Pharisees, it's to the scribes, but it's also to hypocrites. Woe to those. Look at verse 14 there. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. No less than seven times in that chapter he says, woe to you. And he references those who are religious. Listen, there's a big difference, and there's a warning to the religious. Now, do not just put this in a historical context. This is a message for all of us, because it can happen to anyone. It's not just Pharisees, it's not scribes, it's hypocrites. Hypocrite is someone who's beginning, they say they're living, they're saying one thing, but they're living a different life. It's a false front or face that you put on. The word's taken from the Greek, which means actually an actor on a stage who puts on a mask to become something else that he's not for that particular part in the play. A lot of people live that way. They get up in the morning, they put on a mask, they walk out. I'm a Christian. I know Jesus, but yet they're hypocrites. Listen, religion is a dangerous thing. And it can get a hold of any one of us. And I begin to think about this. Jesus, this warning just wasn't for 2,000 years ago. What is the word to me today as a follower of you? What is the meaning to us as followers of you? And the warning is this, is that you can allow this relationship, this one-time vibrant, he's alive approach to your walk with God, this one time you so hungered for the word, the one time you so desired to be in church, the one time you just felt like God so transformed you, you get along with people, but over the years and life just wears on you and beats at your doors over and over again. And what happens? The hunger's stolen from your heart for the word. The desire to be in church, the desire to be filled, the desire to even control your attitude has gone away. That, to me, is becoming religious, and you moved away from personal relationship with Christ. Because when you maintain a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, there's something happens in that relationship. There's something about being in the presence of a holy and mighty God and understanding His love and His grace and His mercy, forgiveness. You come out of that relationship present, you can't help but respond to people around you differently. How many know what I'm talking about? Listen, that shouldn't just be a one-time thing at salvation. And we've limited to the experiences that we had in the past. Listen, it ought to be an everyday occurrence when you wake up. Jesus, I want to draw near to your heart. I want to draw near to your teachings, oh God. And I want that vibrant relationship today. I want the hunger for your word today. If you don't, you're setting yourself for just some religious experience that you're going to ride out, thinking that everything is all right, but acting more like a hypocrite than you are a saint or a follower of God. I say that with all love because, listen, it's a deceptive thing. There's a spirit attached to religion. And that spirit can get a hold of us. Our church history shows us. Church history for 2,000 years shows us that what was a vibrant, stable, enthusiastic, going after Jesus, turning the city of Jerusalem upside down, leading people to the Lord. What did it turn into? It turned into the dark ages of the church where it was just taken from us and became this religious thing that most of us were born into in one way or another, or that's all we saw before us. Until there was a move of God's Spirit and brought revival, and God does that. That's His grace. He brings revival, and He brings people out of that religious experience, and He brings the fire down. It begins to burn in your heart, and you begin to see victories, and there's change begins to happen. Then what? Revivals come, revivals go. And people slip back into what? Religious spirit. The church slips back into it. God's grace again, a decade later or a century later, another revival. But listen, we don't have much time left, folks. And I don't want to be caught when Jesus comes back living some religious experience. I don't want it. And not only do I not want it for me, I don't want it for this congregation. I want us alive. I want us shouting the victory. I want us to proclaiming God's goodness. I want us to making the world aware of God's love and presence. I want us to be actively involved in reaching out, praying for and believing for spiritual awakening. That's what I want to see us that way. How many are with me on this? And that's let's give God thanks and praise that He has allowed His mercy and grace to be with us. So there was a strict warning on these last words, and I think they'd be heeded. Now, number three thing I kind of pull out of here, and I get this from being in the land again, but Matthew chapter 24. You read Matthew chapter 24, and what you read in Matthew chapter 24 is Jesus begins to expound on the second coming of Christ. Jesus Himself begins to predict how things are going to be happening in the very near future, to when He was existing there 2,000 years ago, and then He even projects it further into the end times, and He talks about the warnings, and He gets into, like in the days of Noah, etc., and the rapture. He begins to talk about two people in the field. All of Matthew 24 is talking about the second coming of Christ. He takes a whole chapter. So here's the point. The Jews back in the land begins the countdown to the end. I think this becomes clear in Jesus' message before He leaves. When you see the Jews back in the land, the clock begins to tick again. And as the clock ticks again, it's counting down to the end of the world that we now know. And it's true. And it's something that we should keep in mind. Now, of course, when you're in the land of Israel, we're experiencing that. You're hearing it on the news. But you don't have to be in the land of Israel. Our front pages of our paper, it's like reading Matthew chapter 24. the things that are happening around Israel and the pressures and the attacks, and but the miracle of God bringing them back to the land. Absolutely a miracle. I'm beyond all odds the world would have ever given them, and yet they needed one person on their side, God. Because God was on their side, they're back in the land. There are struggles, but they're back in the land. God has promised. Jesus predicted in 24 that in the year 70 AD, that was 35 years or so after Jesus ascended into heaven, that there would be a destruction. Guess what happened in 70 AD? There was a destruction. We visited some of the buildings that were destroyed in 70 AD, or right around there, 67, 68, 69, 70, that were destroyed during that uprising. They would be scattered, he said, until the end. And then he'd begin to bring them back again. When he brings them back again, he said, I'm going to begin to sprinkle them with water. And he said, I'm going to get the world's attention. Listen, hopefully he gets our attention. The countdown has started. The end is near. Now, when I thought about this last night, listen, that doesn't mean you walk around with a placard sign that says the end is near, you know, and you take it to work and things like that. But here's what you can do. You ought to have that sign somewhere in your heart that says the end is near. It ought to be showing. It ought to be right there visible to you in every decision that you make. The end is near. Every choices that you make, the end is near. Am I making right choices? And your life choices, am I making right life choices? All of Matthew chapter 24. And what is the answer? Be ready. Look at this verse here. This verse, Jesus himself said that. He said, then there will be great tribulation, such has not been seen since the beginning of the world until this time. Talk about the end time tribulation. Nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Jesus is talking, unless he cuts off those days, all flesh would have been destroyed. We stood on a place called the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is where Jesus was reading and teaching this teaching, Matthew chapter 24. This one right here, just on the east side, looking at the city of Jerusalem. He said he was going to return to the Mount of Olives, and he would stop what was happening during the tribulation and shorten those days. He talks about the second coming of Christ. Man, it's exciting to stand there on the Mount of Olives, but Jesus is coming soon. Say it with me. Jesus is coming soon. Oh, come on, all of us. Jesus is coming soon. Say it again. Jesus is coming soon. Keep it alive in your heart. Say it often to yourself. Share it with other people as best as you can. Number four takes us into Matthew 25. Matthew 25 talks about several parables. One's about 10 virgins. Five of them had oil in, five didn't. Talks about talents. Most were faithful, some weren't faithful with their talents. It talks about the separation of the sheep and goats. And the end. All of this is preparation for the end, that while I'm gone, here's things that you need to be aware of. Keep oil in your lamp. Use your talents that God has given you. And it says that make sure that your attitude's that of sheep and not of goats. So what's the point? Be faithful and occupy till he comes. Jesus is simply saying, listen, I'm going, but be faithful and occupy until I come. And that's what God is expecting of us. Just be faithful and occupy. And he could come at any moment, but be faithful until he does come. And then the last one comes out very clearly, not only at the end of Matthew, but the end of the other Gospels, and that is this: go and tell the world the good news. I give you the authority, Matthew chapter 28. He said, I give you authority, power has been given to me, now I give you the authority, go and make disciples of all nations, go tell people the good news. And let me say something about the good news. The reason there's need of good news is because there's a lot of bad news. And here's the bad news, folks. Sin has destroyed our world and will destroy our world. Sin separates man from God. From the very beginning when Adam fell, it was disobedience to God's word, God's ways. Sin will always separate you from God. That's the bad news. Sin is what brings destruction to homes. Sin is what brings destruction to young people's lives. Sin is what brings destruction to a nation or a country. Sin brings destruction to a world. But God, not willing for this to continue on without any hope, steps right in the middle of it. And you have those chapters from 25, 26, 27 that talk about his last days, his death, his burial, his resurrection, leads us up to his ascension. His last words were, tell the good news. That's what we have an opportunity to do, folks. Tell the good news of Jesus Christ. Would you stand with me, please? Wow. Just a reminder of some things. A reminder of things that I believe that were on the heart of our Lord that he needed to teach. He reserved them, obviously, for the time he would be in Jerusalem, the last days. But they're not ancient to the extent that they don't speak to us today. Would you close your eyes and bow your heads just a moment? Sometime during this prayer, I'm going to ask for our prayer folks to kind of make their way up to the front.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.